Blog Talk Radio.
Come on, baby, make it hot. Ride the cock till you hit the spot. Come on, baby, make it hot.
Doing it doggy style. Wow, 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 yippee yo, yippee yay, bow wow, yippee yo, yippee. Wow, 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 yippee yo, yippee yay, bow wow, yippee yo, yippee.
And welcome to the 9 o'clock cocktail hour of Naked Soma. Gotta get this in before, because there's no way to record it, so I'm just gonna play it now.
Oh, go ahead.
No sleep till.
Okay, so that is the theme. Boy, you know, for the love of God, you think you can get 5 seconds of cooperation from my computer?
No.
Oh, welcome to Naked Soma. It is another Wednesday evening, high atop the hump day, looking down in the valley below of the weekend to come for us, which will bring us much coldness, apparently.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, there will be frostbite and wind chill factors and layers
on.
And all kinds of stuff. Well, it's winter.
I don't care. You guys no right to do that to me. I don't
like
really?
It. Oh, really? Move to freaking
Sorry,
Florida, then.
I had a on toe for you there. No, that I don't want to go to Florida. Blech.
Yeah, exactly. Humidity, that's my kryptonite.
No, I hate it.
Anyway, we have conjured up from the ethos a very special guest, actually, who I never would have thought to call until our flyboy fell through. Hello. So why don't you tell them about the guests while I get over to the site here.
All right. It's Dr. Ruben Nyman, and he is a sleep and dream specialist, and he's also a clinical assistant professor of medicine at the University of Arizona's program in the integrative medicine, which is actually directed by Andrew Weil, who's big time.
Wild, sorry.
Yes, actually.
Mm-hmm.
He's big time. So he's the director of the sleep program there at Miraval Resort.
Mm-hmm.
And he agreed to come on kind of last minute, so pretty cool of him.
Yeah, and not in front of the site yet, but what's his website's address again?
Oh, I don't have it in front of me. Hang on a second. I will get it.
I know his name is Ruben,
Nyman.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll figure it out. I'll find it.
Sure.
I think it might just be his name. It's Dr. D.R. Nyman, NAIMAN.com.
Okay. Well.
So he can correct us if I'm saying his name wrong. He's eco. He'll go with the flow.
Yeah, he'll flow with it. Yeah, I'm not worried about him. So anyway, here we are, middle of the week. This is kind of a important date because we're ramping up to that first full moon on the 22nd. And now we are past the point of winter accommodation, so let the fear factor begin. Let all of the death-mongering begin. We are in the energy of the winter, and now the Anto has us by the throat.
Right. Even though we had, 65-degree weather, we're still in accommodation. We're okay. We're ready to go. Because that kind of threw me right back into spring.
It doesn't have anything to do with the temperature. It has to do with, the time of the season going through the cycle. So, all that temperature thing does is just like the volume control. You're in the season. So, actually, I will take a little walk here to my ecological calendar. Ooh, this is like a remote. Going into the treatment room. Bringing along the universe. Let's see. Today, being the 16th day of our Lord, is Arctic Loon Day.
It's what?
Arctic Loon Day. In,
really?
In the ecological calendar, yes. Tomorrow is Common Raccoon Day. Friday, Frost Whore Day. That's what it says. And then, Saturday looks like a funky day. It's Heath Heather Day.
Oh,
and
my.
Then Sunday is Ice Feather Day. Who's making this up?
You know what today is?
People buy that calendar.
You know what today is? It's Dr. Jeb is Here Day.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, he must have been coming in from Snow Shower Day, which was Monday.
That's right. Hey, Doug.
How much snow you got up there after the storm a couple of days ago?
We only got about 8 here.
We got nothing.
Yeah, well, I got about 6. So
we got 8 minutes of excuses is what we got. Storm went north, the wind did this, and, you know. And they were canceling school, and people were running for bread and milk.
Yeah, well, we were definitely, it was way over, like, it was supposed to be real big, and it was about to stop you.
Oh.
There's been an accident.
It was, it was about 8. They got, like, 12 up in Concord, but, you know, down here in the flatlands, we just got 8.
In the flatlands.
Oh, my.
Well, this is going to be an interesting shoe because, as many of you archivers out there know, Dr. Jeb has not had a good night's sleep in nearly a year. And he doesn't plan on getting one. So some of the questions I want to fire at this safe when he comes on board here has to do with regulating your sleep as it relates to the people around you. Because some people, especially babies, are not prone to sleeping through the night. Although I think your twins are pretty good with that, no?
Well, I wouldn't say good with it, but they're good. I mean, they're great babies, but, you know, they're like 12 and 3 and, you know, 5 and something like that. Depends. Sometimes I stay up till 3. I'm, like, keeping Flippy hours lately.
Wow.
Yeah.
Who are you?
Yeah, I might have to ask him about that, like, how the hell am I alive kind of a question, you know?
I'd like to know that myself.
Maybe the doc will know. I don't know. But it has to do a lot with, you know, the rhythm that you get into, especially when you start talking about stuff that's been established for years. You know, if you stuck me in the middle of Topeka, Kansas, I'd still be up in the middle of the night at this point. It would take me a while
But what would it be? Like it's kind of like that whole question about, you know, if you have somebody who's got a scoliosis that's been, you know, they've habituated to, and their EMGs look good, and their heart rate variability is good. Are you going to go pound that spine straight and actually do them more harm? Or, in other words, if I take you and I put you into Kansas and I get you, you know, going to church on Sunday and Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and I get you sleeping, you know, from 9 to 6 every morning,
mm-hmm.
How, I mean, that's going to be and I'm just curious, that's kind of a perturbation to your schedule.
Perturbation. You'd have to find some kind of embalming fluid. I wouldn't last. It's like me putting on a shirt with buttons. Never happens.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. You want to scare people? Put me in a shirt with buttons.
Oh man.
Yeah. I'm ready for the Undertaker. You know.
So I mean, the question
take
is,
take me away.
So
go ahead, make your point.
Well, that kind of was my. It's more of a question than a point. Can you become habituated to what to other people would be very, you know, unhealthy or unhealthful sleep-wake cycles when actually you've adapted quite well? Thank you very much.
Yeah, well, that's there's a textbook definition of what is accepted as being rhythmic and normal. Then you when you go into one person, and if you just try to apply that across the board to everybody all the time, you're going to screw a lot of people up.
I think that's why Irv's stuff was so resonant to us, because...
Mm-hmm.
Irv didn't, and sort of actually what's become our work, we don't care what you do, as long as what you do creates coherence, then that's all the better for you.
Yeah, and the other thing is trying to force yourself out of it is sometimes the method is more toxic than the disease, so to speak, or the dis-ease, as it were. The other part of it is that, again, you're talking about habituated stuff. If you take someone who classifies themselves as a night owl or someone who classifies themselves as a morning person, and just like I have people out here that work a lot of, third shift stuff, and they'll rotate every 3 or 4 weeks, your body has a capacity to adapt to it because survival does not exactly have like a rigid schedule. So it's adaptation and it's evolution, and it's all about how you can deal with things over time. That really the question is I got to ask the doc about, because he gets into things that are much more kind of on the woo side of the coin, because he gets into dream research and things like that, which has to do with that funky little monster called day residue. And I want to see if he knows anything about that, so we'll get to this in a couple minutes. But anyone check out what Eco Randy Moss got himself into this last couple of hours here today? Have anyone seen that?
Mm-mm.
Yes. Seems a paramour of his down in Florida has accused him of, using her like a punching bag, And then refusing to get medical help. And
really?
Randy the Eco, ever the responsible citizen, said, "It ain't me, didn't do it, she's looking for money." So we're now we're back to what I would call the familiar he said, she said. We could put down the Roger Clemens stuff and all the he said stuff from a couple weeks ago. And so this little
drama. Didn't that just happen with Pac? Didn't Pac-Man just get accused of
something? Pac-Man Jones was out last night. Yes, he was. Eco, too, was out last night. And he didn't just punch any woman in a strip club. He punched a lawyer in the strip club.
Oh, that was smart.
Oh, this guy's the Eco Hall of Fame. I mean, the fact that he sets foot in a strip club after all the trouble he got into is one irony. And then he sucks a woman in the face in the strip club who turns out to be a lawyer. Oh, and I'm sure he did the same noise when he figured out what happened. This is like, you know, what are his friends thinking? Nothing to do. Let's go to the strip club with this guy. Every time he walks in, one is gunplay and somebody gets hurt and he gets in trouble. The man can't live outside of a strip club for 5 minutes. It's like he's like drawn to it like some kind of magnet. Oh, I just don't understand why somebody around these people, whether it's Michael Vick or Mike Tyson or whoever, doesn't somebody have the ability to say no? I guess not. I guess there's part of being Eco, too. Huh?
Well, I was just talking about that judge who went off on OJ. Did you see that?
Yeah, I saw a little clip of that. Yeah, that was kind of funny. That was good. Well, the judge promised to be lenient, and then promised to actually be more forceful, and then, like, you got away with it this time. It was like a cartoon. I still can't understand what the heck this guy did. If somebody literally stole his stuff, and he went forcefully to go take it back, and then the guys that he brought with him basically conspired against him to say he forced us to bring guns in there. Is that basically the suit? Is that what's going on?
I've never.
No one's ever explained. It's almost like the vaccine thing.
Yeah.
No one's ever explained to me why what he did was wrong, but what they did wasn't wrong. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
They just want that guy in jail for one reason or another. So I don't understand it. So, all right, so that's sort of the lay of the land. I know Mitt Romney won some useless thing in last night in Michigan. Everyone made a big deal out of that because I don't think we're going to elect the president in the fall, actually. I think we're just going to submit a name randomly from the phone book, and we'll just rotate every 2 weeks because none of these guys seem really presidential to me at all.
No. Nope.
And the more they fight and they fuss, the more amusing it gets because somebody like Gore, someone's going to come out of the ashes in August and go, "I am here to serve," you know, one of those deals. Okay, like Perot. You know, Perot didn't run until like August that year when he came in and screwed up the election and Clinton got in there.
I hear Bloomberg also talking.
Bloomberg's
about
another one. I'm telling you, there's four or five independent guys that are just saying, well, I'm not going to waste my time on these primaries and run around the country like a chicken and try and get, you know, Sapes in Iowa to agree with me over pancakes. The heck with that. You could just sit back and just wait until these guys are exhausted. And the funny part is, they do it all in Macy's window, so everybody's weak spots are basically given up in the process of scratching and clawing for the primary stuff. And then by the time they get to the general election, everybody knows everybody's playbook. Everyone knows, Obama's weak spots and Hillary, forget it. I mean, she's a train wreck. I don't know what she's going to pull next time in South Carolina. But yeah, this is going to be an interesting couple of months because we got, I think that Super Tuesday comes up that first Tuesday in February, and that's like a big deal. And then we'll start getting into some heavy hitting in the spring. But it's going to be 8 more months of this. I don't know if I can deal with it.
Can you deal
day.
With our guest?
Oh well, hey, let's get to some good stuff. Yeah.
Wait.
Yeah. All right, click him in here. See if that's
Hello.
Working.
Yep.
You there?
Yes.
Is he on?
Hi.
Hey.
Okay. So, joining us from the desert, eh?
From the desert, yes, yes.
Dr. Ruben, is that your first name? Is it Naaman?
It's Naaman.
Ah, 50-50, Naaman. Okay. Hey, we flipped the coin. All right, and so thanks for joining us tonight on short notice like this.
Sure. We have to be funnier than the primaries, huh? That's going to be hard to do.
Yeah. Actually, you'd be an interesting person to ask about this. Which one of them do you think has the most jet lag when you look at them?
You know, it's interesting you mentioned that. I just gave a lecture on sleep. I'm at Miraval Resort in Tucson. Excuse me. And I was talking about Bill Clinton, who recently, or weeks or a couple months ago, was on The Daily Show, and he talked about the impact of sleeplessness on politics. And it's actually profound. We don't think about it, but lots of our legislators are back and forth, you know, to particularly ones that live far away, and they're jet-lagged. Lots of really critical business and political negotiations are done by people who are severely jet-lagged and sleep-deprived on top of that. So it's a concern.
Yeah, I just wonder, like, because sometimes these guys are giving speeches, you know, in three or four different states and two or three different time zones in a couple of days, and they don't even know what audience they're in front of sometimes, and then they screw something up, and then that becomes the next sound bite that the other guy uses to gnaw on the other one's nerves, and around
you know,
they go.
It's reminiscent of the way physicians are trained, right? It's kind of a hazing ritual where they're forced to stay awake, and I think there's some real parallels there, and it's unfortunate because so many professionals are not at their best because they're sleep deprived.
Yeah, chiropractors have that, but they call that practice. there's no hazing for us. We just go out in the world. So I wonder, how did you get into this line of research from where you started? I was curious.
Well, it goes way back. My parents were of Eastern European descent, and I think like many people from other cultures, they just had this sort of inherent value for sleep. It was important. In fact, it was a cardinal sin in my house if somebody was napping and you woke them up by mistake.
Really? I'm moving in with you tomorrow.
I can't
get 5 minutes of shut-eye without somebody tapping on me.
Yeah. Wow. So, you know, there was a sense that sleep was sacred. So that just sort of stuck with me. And then I got very interested in dreaming when I was an undergraduate and then in graduate school, and got interested in health psychology, the psychology of illness and wellness in grad school. And then it just took me into sleep and dreams eventually.
Okay. So then, you're working with Andy and the Desert Cats out there, all the integrated people.
Uh-huh.
Yes. Exactly, Wildcats. And I'm curious, a lot of this new stuff that's been rolling out the last 15, 20 years has gained traction in the mainstream for the one single reason is that there's some type of either, I don't want to say it's a cottage industry, but there's some type of way of taking this information that was just kind of laying around in the academics and laying around in the research committees, and then you make an application out of it. So, you know, I've noticed a couple things on your site. You have some products on there. So how did you take something that was sort of loosely fit in 15 different disciplines and kind of funnel it down to something that the population would go, okay, I finally admit that I need this? How do you get the physicians and the academics and everybody to kind of toe the line on this and make this something you could deliver to the public? Because they're definitely running around in all my drugstores trying to fight this stuff.
Yeah, what a good question, what a big question you're asking. You know, I think in a lot of ways it's a question about integrative medicine in general, because we healthcare, you know from an alternative healthcare practitioner perspective, that we've cut people up terribly. We sent the limbs to the orthopods, and we sent the eyes to the ophthalmologist, and the brains to the neurologist.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of like when you try to do integrative medicine, you begin to look like Frankenstein trying to sew all this stuff together. But the truth is, the reality is that in nature, we are one. You know, we're unified beings. We have a unified consciousness. So, a big part of this is really trusting our inherent nature. There's so much focus on disease and illness, and the deeper reality is, I think, that in our nature, we are inclined. We're hell-bent on staying healthy. I think people get sick after fighting the sort of the current toward health for a long time. So a lot of this work is just going with the nature. It's a natural vision. When I teach about sleep, I get a lot of intuitive nods in the audience. You know, people, the stuff that I say is not an invention. It's just a discovery. It's a discovery of the truths that we all, I think, know in our heart. You know, for example, people know that they need to slow down before they can stop. But they have to be reminded. Most of us don't. For most people, it's sort of like we don't hit the brakes till the car gets in the garage. You know, most people don't even try to slow down until they get into bed. And at that point, you know, the engine's still hot and they're all revved up and they can't sleep.
Well, I remember just, you know, one of these things that they ripped out of the pages of Guyton when I was training. And now in positive physiology, we talk about recovery and exertion as no different than rest and activity on a grander scale. But they used to talk about sleep and breathing as the restoration system. I thought that was great. And I said, well, if your quality of sleep is poor, then your breathing rhythm during the day should be much, much more refined and more accurate, because it's almost like a checking and savings account, the way it was explained to me, that if you're not getting sufficient amounts of sleep, then the onus is on you on the voluntary side to get more oxygen when you're awake so that you can go on less recovery. And I just see so many people have horrible breathing patterns, and then, of course, they have sleep deficiencies and apneas and all these other things. So
if someone's
going to correct their sleep pattern starting tonight, is the first thing that they need to address, is it the breathing pattern, or is it just the fact that they're just not getting enough in terms of quantity?
Well, I don't know that there's a first thing. My experience is that usually there are multiple things that have to be addressed simultaneously. Lots of people will take pot shots at improving their sleep. They'll cut back on caffeine, for example, and then their sleep doesn't improve. And then they'll drink caffeine again, but they'll cut back on alcohol. Doesn't help. Then they'll start exercising. They'll stop. So I think someone once asked me if there was a secret to a good night's sleep, and the first thing I thought of is, yeah, it's a good day's waking. And then of course the secret of a good day's waking is a good night's sleep. They support one another. Breathing, I think, is fascinating. And fundamentally, sleep is about correcting our circadian and ultradian cycles.
Mm-hmm.
We're so disentrained from natural cycles. I think a big part of getting healthy is developing a healthier relationship with the world, with the natural world, not necessarily the cultural world, because there is a fundamentally healthy rhythm in life, you know. So, you know, we know that, for example, that we can entrain our breathing to different processes depending on what you're observing, what you're letting in, who you're hanging out with. You know, breathing will entrain. We talk about, you know, poetically, two hearts beating as one. I don't know if you know one of my colleagues here, Gary Schwartz, years
ago. Sure.
Yeah,
it's the universe, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, did you know Watson, too? That is Buddy Watson with the M for Me stuff and all that weird stuff?
No.
Okay.
I've known Gary
Yeah, he gets
but,
into
know,
all
he,
the metaphysics of it. Yeah, no, but Gary's work's very interesting, yeah.
Yeah, he did some simple stuff where he found that if he could get two people to sit and connect and sometimes actually just hold on to a wire, that their rhythms would entrain, you know, their heart rate would entrain, their respiration would entrain. So I think we're influenced a whole lot more by what's around us than we know. And, of course, our systems want to heal and correct and fall back into natural rhythms.
Yeah, and this is, like, again, this is for the traditionally trained, traditionally conventionally oriented person that thinks of themselves as a single skull walking around not connected to anybody else.
Right.
They don't understand that, like, and I don't know if he's come back in, but Dr. Jeb is raising two twins right now along with the rest of his infield of kids. So he hasn't seen, you know, the cool side of the pillow since the summer. These interferences with your sleep rhythm, just as much as the coherences you're talking about, that's a dynamic that you have to govern, not just as an isolated person, but as an integrated part of whatever community or family or whatever rhythm
exactly.
You're in. Because
yeah, exactly.
Work affects that too. Students do it. They stay up all night and study.
The big picture is a fascinating one. You know, in the program in integrative medicine, we've been fascinated with the substrate of chronic inflammation, which seems to kind of be burning behind almost all disease. You know, it's a neurodegenerative disease and cardiovascular disease. We see it in cancers, in metabolic disorders and diabetes. We see it in certainly in apnea and insomnia. We see low-grade chronic inflammation now in depression. And so it seems to be this sort of background fire that's burning. But what's interesting is at a parallel level, the planet's on fire too. We have global warming. Just as our bodies need to cool at night to sleep well, the planet needs to cool at night, and it doesn't. You know, as Al Gore said, the planet has a fever. So there's an interesting parallel. It's not just as individuals that we're off, but the planet itself is on fire, and I think we need to work on both fronts, both environment and the individual, to heal.
9:24 p.m. on the East Coast. Here we are, Naked Somer, with Dr. Nyman, I guess. Get that right? You can join the conversation here at 646-478-4847. And just to let you know, at 9:24, we went Gaia. So
right.
It took us a couple of minutes. But
that's good.
and this is something, you know, we're coming from a somatic point of view where you're dealing with the relationship of self and surroundings. So the environment is not just the physical thing, but it actually has metaphysical qualities too. And I know a lot of your work is in dream research. And, you know, psychologists for years have been using this as a resource to tap into the other than conscious aspect of a person. What do you think about the relationship between the content of a dream and some things like lunar cycles? Because I know, like Dr. Goodman out on the West Coast has been able to trace this to neurotransmitters and other things that are cycling through. So can someone look at the content of their dreams as far as the tone of them, the mood of them, or their rising mood in the morning to see if the way that they're dreaming is in rhythm with their environment as a sort of a reflection of that? Or how do you guys look at those things?
Well, the answer is not terribly sexy. It's complicated. I'm not that up on the relationship of dream content to, say, lunar events. But I'm glad you mentioned dreaming, because I'd actually like to talk to people who have expertise in chiropractic about this. You may or may not know, one of the things that happens when we dream is that we lose muscle tone. Mm-hmm. In fact, we become all of our voluntary muscles become paralyzed when we dream. Now, voluntary muscles are fed through the basal ganglia, you know, the part of the brain that mediates emotion. Also sends, well, there are nerve fibers that traverse that and go down to our voluntary muscles. And the short of that is that there's a really interesting connection between movement, or using our voluntary muscles, and emotion. In fact, the word emotion, the root of the word emotion is motion. So an emotion basically is a proclivity to move. You know, when we have a strong feeling, we say we are moved. And even if we're sitting still, if we have strong emotion in our being, that energy is sent down, it's grounded in the body, in the muscles. So when we dream, that energy is cut off. It's sort of like the lightning rod gets taken away. And the emotional energy gets backwashed out of the dream. It seems to me, and I don't know of any research on this, but when we dream, our muscles get the best rest they possibly can get because they're totally offline. Mm-hmm. And here's the kicker. Evidence suggests that more and more people are dreaming less and less. It's just the way modern lifestyle goes. Excessive alcohol consumption, suppression of melatonin, which promotes dreaming through light at night, lots of drugs, virtually all NSAIDs suppress melatonin and suppress dreaming, diuretics suppress melatonin and dreaming, virtually every antidepressant ever significantly suppresses dreaming, you know, minor tranquilizers like benzodiazepines significantly suppress dreaming. So we live in a world where the dream is being pushed away. And I've wondered for a long time, I've worked with guys in manipulative medicine, osteopaths out here, who really look at holding, emotional holding patterns in the muscles over, you know, years and years of tension and its impact on organ systems and posture. You know, Abraham Lincoln once said that everybody over 40 is responsible for their face. It's a beautiful recognition of how this energy flows through us. So I'm curious, if I can turn the table, so from a chiropractic standpoint, what do you know about that? What do you know about the relationship of emotion and muscles and dreaming?
Well, just from the somatic memory standpoint, you've got, you know, over 600 muscles, and the locomotor part of your system, the voluntary part, there's only 15 muscle groups that are really kind of entrained together to make you kind of walk around. And when you watch people, if you watch those time-lapse things like the sleep labs and how the people roll back and forth, they're unwinding tension that's all the way through their myofascial system from the cranial structures all the way down to the pelvic structures all the way through mm-hmm. all the way up to the skin. So you're dealing with not just the mechanical sort of imbalance, but a neurophysiological kind of tone that they've set for themselves. That's why I was asking about the neurotransmitters before. So to watch someone sleep is to watch someone unwind the tension that they haven't been able to attend to during the day, that's been background noise. And then when you see them during the day, especially when you're dealing with emotional things that are triggering them, they'll use those same muscle groups to kind of put the armor back up. And so there's sort of this disassembly of the armor at night and then the reassembly during the day, and that's sort of the tension that you're looking at there.
I wonder sometimes if this chronic lack of disassembly at night, you know, there are certain muscle groups, even during REM metonia, where there's a loss of muscle tone in dreaming, mm-hmm. it seems that some people hold so tightly. And this is just theoretic, but I've come to believe that, let's say somebody has some chronic holding in the back of the neck or the low back or mm-hmm. someplace, that when that's released, there's an energy released, and that energy will come out in the form of a dream.
Yeah, well, this is another thing that maybe I can help you out with here, is that they call it the dark vice in somatics, where you have the basic fetal position, you have a kind of a C-curve with your back, and you
right.
see people curl up in that C-curve at night and go back to that posture to get back to that state, to back to that womb-like state. You get in the fetal
mm-hmm.
position.
Mm-hmm.
And then the secondary curves in the neck and the low back, they have reflexes that cause you to create those curves when you're developing. And so people go sort of back to the womb and then try to get back to their mature spine during the course of the unwinding, during the sleep cycle, especially stage four sleep. And so when you see them having these problems during the day with posture, it's almost like they can't completely make the transition back and forth, so they end up with what would look like sort of a maladapted posture, but actually what you're
right.
seeing is someone who's not completely unwound from the night before. It's like the rhesus peanut
right,
butter
right.
cut. They got a little Wednesday into Thursday. You know?
So I think one of the things that would help in this would be if people would sleep more deeply. Now, lots of people, you know, when we sleep, most of us lose significant awareness or full awareness. I think of sleep as the metaphor is we descend into a sea. We descend into the waters of sleep. And most of us are so tethered to the waking world that instead of going deeply into sleep, we snorkel, basically. We get into the waters of sleep, but we're very close to the waking world. So a lot of my work is aimed at encouraging people to let go more deeply. And I suspect, I can't say no for sure, but I suspect that the more we can encourage people to dream, in a sense, there's kind of a lucid quality. We bring attitudes that we carry during the day into the night and into the dream world. The more that people can actually let go of some of the tension stored in myofascial patterns in the dream. In fact, I have a theory that dreaming itself is anti-inflammatory, because when we're dreaming, our melatonin levels have peaked out. It's the latter half of the night. But what's interesting, too, is we reach core TMIN. We reach our lowest point in body temperature. So there's a lot of energy being given out of the body. Now, this is if we sleep and dream normally, which, unfortunately, the vast majority of people don't. So I suspect that even though we know that good things happen to the immune system in deep sleep and other things happen in dreams, I think the night is a really powerful healing zone.
Hmm. Oh, okay. Well, let's go around the room
question.
A little bit. So, yeah, Val's got a question, and I think I want to bring Jeb here in a minute.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Hey, Val,
Doctor,
how are you?
Good, Dr. Nyman. How are you? All right. Here's my question. Let's say I have a friend who's a chiropractor who stays up and works all night and gets an hour of sleep. What can I do to get him to go to bed at night?
Well, I think the best thing you can do is ask yourself why you're carrying that responsibility.
Because I'm working with him all night.
That request came from my landlord.
You know,
let's get into that night owl question. If someone is more
exactly.
functional at night,
yep.
is that something that's like verboten in the sleep community, or is it that some people are just more functional at night?
I'll tell you, I've come to believe very strongly that there is no such thing in nature as a night owl. A friend of mine I know very well, his wife considers herself a night owl. I've spent many nights at their home, and it's really interesting to see what this night owl does. So at about 9 o'clock, you know, an hour or two after dinner, she has a bowl of coffee ice cream, which she absolutely insists is not about the caffeine. It's because she loves the taste. And then she has an office at home, and when I walk into her office at night, I have to put on a pair of sunglasses. In every corner of the office, she's got this giant halogen lamp beaming out light. It looks like you're entering a spaceship, okay? Yeah. And then she works as a newspaper reporter, so she's writing these really dramatic stories, and she stays up till 1 or 2 in the morning. She can call herself a night owl. Most night owls, if you look closely at what they do, and sometimes in very subtle, sometimes in obvious ways, they re-energize at night. It's not in our nature, it's not in our genes to be awake at night like that. So if you subtract all of it, what I call counterfeit energy, you'll get the person will start going to sleep.
Hmm. All right.
If
well,
they want
there
to.
You go. Well, if they want, I guess the one reason I wanted to ask that question follow up because if there's not a night owl, is there then the morning person?
Well, I don't think so.
I think by nature,
you know, when we lived in a way, when we were entrained with nature, you know, morning light is a really powerful energizer. You know, I mean, this has been written about in sacred traditions around the world. It increases serotonin. It extroverts us. It draws us out. We're attracted to newness. So by nature, we would come up in the morning, and by nature, when things get dark and dusky, melatonin is released. When the world darkens, because 80% of sensory input is visual, you know, we introvert. You know, there's nothing to do out there, so to speak, and so our attention turns inward. So I think in nature, you know, if we were disentrained from culture to some degree, we would get up with the dawn and go to bed an hour or two after dusk. I don't think there are really morning persons or night people.
Interesting.
So then the circadian rhythm is sort of the king and the ultradian rhythm is sort of the prince in that equation.
It's an interesting point of view. I don't know. I think they're both important. You know, I think of it as a symphony. You know, and there are probably all kinds of other rhythms that you know, we don't know about, but they work together. You know, it raises an interesting point. I was just talking to somebody, a patient, about Prozac, and, you know, people often think about the biochemical activity of a medication like an antidepressant, but often we don't look at the half-life. I mean, this is true for caffeine and melatonin and other things. And so, you know, Prozac has a half-life, or are you sitting down, has a half-life of 7 days. This introduces a kind of instrument, you know, this relentless buzzing sound into our psychobiology. And so, you know, I think we're always affecting the symphony of our various rhythms in different ways. But I think looking at the rhythm, the rhythm of medications we take or supplements or other things is very, very important. And I think we need to have a regard for the body and the mind's need, the fundamental natural need to slow down periodically, you know, Braak cycles, ultradian rhythms through the day.
A lot of stuff in our work deals with heart rate variability, especially clinically.
Right.
I want to bring Dr. Jeb online here for a sec. You there, Jeb, by the way?
I am.
You there? Oh, okay.
Right. Yes.
Are you there? He's floating around
he's
up
there
in New Hampshire. Okay. So I wanted to get a perspective from your side of the coin. We deal with a lot of people that are, I would just, you know, just generally call them stress addicts. You know, whether they're adrenaline junkies or whether they're, like you're saying, they're just caffeine junkies or whatever, and they get on the table, and you always get a motor response when you do something body work wise, especially the way you know Jeb works with the Arthrostim, just with light force work. So, do you think primarily the issue in terms of autonomics is that is it that their sympathetic nervous system, that their defense system is jacked up too high, or their parasympathetic system is basically undernourished because they don't get the postprandial response, they don't like getting drowsy, they get defensive. So is it more a conditioning of the sensory system or the motor system when it comes to that? Because from me and Jeb talking about it, especially when it comes to heart rate, it always comes down to the sensory system first, and then the motor response will get more coherent.
That's the natural flow, isn't it? As it goes in before it can go out.
Yeah.
You know, I to answer your question.
So it stays in
its
memory.
Yeah.
So what do you think, Jeb? As far as the tonal response with the client, is it more like, because you've had the experience of someone falling asleep on the table after you've worked on them, right?
Yeah.
Like all the time. Yeah. You're talking to them 1 minute. So how's the fishing going? And they're out cold. And it's because that's the only time, it happens to me in the dentist all the time, it's the only time they're basically permitting themselves on a voluntary basis to unhook, like you said, to go into the sea, and you'll get 5 or 6 minutes of delta sleep out of them, and they'll wake up fresh as a daisy talking like they just landed at, you know, after a long flight.
Right.
You know, and this is the thing that I think part of the reason why people think they get sort of hooked on body work and hooked on all these alternative methods is because they haven't really internalized the way to do it for themselves, so they go for that release.
Right. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. I'm just saying they go for the release. They use the session no different than they would use a drug.
You know, I think there's truth to that. Although, of course, the advantage with a session like that is they can be taught to do it on their own. But this notion of release is really core to my work at a psychological level. You know, when you look really closely at what goes on around sleep, particularly sleep onset, the transition from waking to sleeping consciousness, in our world, we, without thinking about it, we import waking world intention-driven ways of being into the night world. We import, just as we import day, literally light into the night, we import this waking way of being. And so the most common thing a person will say or do when they're heading to bed is I'm going to sleep. Virtually everybody will either say or think that I'm going to sleep. But it's an interesting statement partly because it's just, it's impossible. You can't literally go to sleep. You can go to bed. You can go to the bathroom. You can go to Milwaukee, right? But you can't go to sleep. In fact, any intention or any volition you bring into the sleep onset process will draw you back into waking consciousness. So the question becomes, well, how do we get there? And so the truth, instead of going to sleep, the truth is a lot closer to the notion that I can't go to sleep, but I can let go of waking. I can release waking.
I just want to jump in there just because I'm in the middle of baby land here. And one thing that I notice about the kids, particularly the babies, is they don't try to go to sleep. They try to stay awake. And I don't think they're really trying to stay awake. I think what they're really doing is they're letting it happen. And if you watch a baby if you watch kids go to sleep, like, or let's reverse. If one of us goes and says, I'm going to go to sleep, we go in, we lie down, we close our eyes, right? And then, boing, they pop back open. Because you close your eyes and your head starts running. But the babies, they stay there and their eyes are open, and you can see them getting heavy.
Right.
And then they close, and then they pop open. And then they have,
how old are the babies?
So these babies are just 20 weeks. I have six. I have twins, identical twin boys who are 20 weeks, and then I have four others.
God. And I suspect you have a sleep disorder.
I don't have a sleep disorder. I was talking to my wife about it tonight, and we could talk hours about my sleep, because I'm one of those people who has felt like I've been a night owl. And I was just telling Nora that at this point, I'm up so late and so frequently at night that and even when I get up in the morning, I used to always be very tired in the mornings. And I'm just, it's like whenever it's time to get up, it's time to get up. It doesn't really matter what the clock says anymore. And if I get four straight, I'm feeling pretty good, which it used to be, much different. So now again, I think in a way I was breaking some old bad habits of just staying up late, and looking at the clock and then having to go and get a certain number of hours in. At the same time, I do think I'm a little bit flatlining right now too. And it's a limited time. But my point is that when I watch them, to me, that's a natural allowing sleep to overcome them, or allowing them to descend into the waters of sleep, rather than saying, I'm going to go to sleep now, and then freaking out and then the sympathetic tone increases because you're anxious because the clock's ticking and you can't get to sleep and you know you got to get up for work tomorrow. So I think it's interesting watching the babies in terms of really true, just, physical, spiritual little beings that are just being, and they're not trying to manipulate anything about when they sleep.
You know, there's strong evidence that shows that sleep is homeostatic, meaning that we are actually always asleep. There's a part of each of us right now that's asleep. It's inside of us. We don't have to create sleep. When we let go of waking, the sleep is there. Beneath the waking, it's like on a cloudy day, the sun is shining. So falling asleep is really about the release of waking consciousness, about the willingness to let go. It's interesting, in Greek mythology, Hypnos, the god of sleep, was a twin. His twin brother was Thanatos, the god of death. In Tibetan Buddhism, the Dalai Lama says that the process of going to sleep is the psychological equivalent of dying. So there's a practice of release at a real fundamental spiritual level. I imagine when you have somebody on the table and they obviously feel safe and you're doing just the right thing and they get a release experience, that serves to pull them. It just allows a deeper release to happen. I think we have to let go of something to sleep. Most of us think about taking something to sleep. We're going to eat some turkey tryptophan or drink some milk or take a Lunesta or something. But I think the real key is the practice of letting go. And obviously, we don't have to let go of everything. If we did, none of us would ever sleep. But I think almost a symbolic letting go opens the door to that. And so I encourage people to practice just any kind of personal, spiritual, or religious release practice at night. I think it's really the thing we've forgotten about sleep.
Yeah, well, we have a couple more questions.
Yeah, we have a caller that has a question. Actually, she's IM'd it to me. Going back to when you were talking about dreaming, she wants to know how she can make herself dream, because she says she's a very light sleeper and she rarely ever remembers her dreams. She's not sure she's dreaming. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, lots of people dream less and less. If you're not sure if you're dreaming, it might be that you're dreaming and forgetting, or it might be that you're not. You know, the best way to improve dreaming is to improve sleep. And again, we're back to melatonin here, because even exposure to small amounts of light at night will suppress melatonin. So there are a number of ways you can increase melatonin and thereby increase dreaming. One is, it sounds simple, but it's challenging, to dim the lights at night. The other is there's a new technology, which I link to on my website. They're Z glasses. They block out, specifically, they're glasses that block out the blue end of the light spectrum, which suppresses melatonin, or you can get light bulbs. So you want to increase melatonin. Of course, the third option is to take an oral supplement of melatonin. Most people who take melatonin take too much and take the wrong kind. And in short, I generally recommend a sublingual dose of between 0.3 and 0.5 milligrams, and also sustained or continued release. Otherwise, melatonin often doesn't work. But and beyond all that, I think, you know, the desire to dream is really important. You know, as I said earlier, we're a culture that sort of dismissed all of this. We see the waking world consciousness as reality, as the real thing. But opening our hearts back to the dream world and just wanting to do it, and of course setting the stage, I think those two things should help.
All right, great. Thank you. She said thanks.
I want to bounce one off of here that's relevant to my world. My son suffers with bruxism to the degree that it sounds like Godzilla is on the other side of the wall sometimes. And this is an ongoing pattern. He does it when he's awake, too. And I know cranially and all the other things that are going on, but would he be both sleep-deprived as far as restlessness and also dream-deprived in terms of not getting enough REM and the bruxism is more a function of that, or is it something
It could be both. It definitely interferes with the quality, the depth of sleep and dreaming. So it's something, and you probably know more about the neuromuscular process behind it than I do, but you know, it's pretty obvious that there's some holding pattern behind it. And the question
was exposed to a lot of anesthesia as a child when he had a lot of operations. So I firsthand I used to watch. It was like the horizontal hold was off on his REM. His eyes would just go, you know, all kinds of crazy directions coming out of the anesthesia, and having to go back for multiple procedures growing up. You could always tell when you watched him go under anesthesia and put him under, it was the same pattern without the bruxism, because everything, all the muscles are shut off. And so when he come out of it 2 or 3 days later, he would like surge on it and almost try to unwind that tension that got stored in there.
The
anesthesia is another one of these things, I think, that's like you talked about with Prozac and some of the other drugs. It leaves a lot of residue, especially in the spinal canal, especially in the ventricles of the brain, that where the body has to make more CSF. Almost like it gives you like a little bit of a hangover in there, and your body becomes a brain that's not bathed in CSF becomes a distressed brain, and you don't want a dehydrated brain. So that's one of the reasons why I think the movement patterns come up to kind of, you know, get the thing kind of charged up again and get the fluids going again, almost to overcome the mechanical barriers like that. So they end up with this sort of like the shutters are rattling all night long and they don't get any rest.
Right. It's amazing, you know, whatever often the stuff that gets swept under the rug during the day gets relegated to night. And, you know, we like to think of night as being the sweet, peaceful time, which it can be. But if we're over the threshold in what we're carrying, you know, whether it's biomedical or psychological, it does spill over into night. And, I mean, it's obvious that we want to release this material. And, you know, I often say to people, to, you know, encourage them to take some time sitting in dusky light and do some talking or do some journaling. You know, when we were kids and we were out on a camping trip, when it got dark, we sat around a small fire and we told ghost stories. There's a natural tendency for our shadow material, you know, for our fears and our hurts and anxieties to come up before we go to bed in dusky light. And if we let it come up then, instead of staying glued to the TV or computer or keep working, we actually can release some of our nightmares before we get into bed.
Huh.
You know? It's kind of like taking a spiritual shower, you know, just to let some of that stuff go.
Oh, I like that.
A spiritual shower.
I like that. I'm taking one right now.
That would be catchy. Just kind of wrap it up. You touched on a lot of topics. I know there's a lot more out there. So what do you think is the number one misconception about sleep? sleep and dream research, or even just the process of sleeping and dreaming that you want to clear up for the audience now?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. I just wrote an article for Psychotherapy Network about this. You know, most of us look at sleep, and I say us, the culture, scientists, even most sleep doctors, we look at sleep in terms of how it can serve waking. In fact, we talk about power sleep, and sleep improves waking immunity, or it improves our ability to learn, our ability to focus. And I'm always reminded of an old Beatles song, Golden Slumbers, and it opens with, I'll spare you my singing it, but the line is, once there was a way to get back home, once there was a way to get back homeward, sleep pretty darling. And that actually was written 300 years before Paul McCartney got it. And what I've come to learn is that when that was written, it was literal. People actually believed that when you were asleep, you weren't just dead to this world. You know, we look at sleep as being dead to the world, but that sleep actually took you somewhere. And what I believe now is that sleep is really nature's meditation gift, that when we sleep, we're taken to, if we sleep well, we're taken to a profound, sublime experience of serenity. That this is like the lazy man's way of meditation, that we're taking to you know, brainwave and spiritual states that are so incredibly peaceful that we have no waking framework to hold them. You know, so sleep is not just about serving our daytime waking world. It's an end in and of itself. It's really worth checking out.
Well, listen, you were a wonderful guest to come on here last minute. You gave us a lot of stuff to think about.
My pleasure.
Awesome.
I want to thank you for getting on
thank
here.
Thank you very much.
If you bump into Dr. Weil, just tell him to forgive the chiropractors. We're all not, you know.
Hey, we have a chiropractor on our faculty.
Well, thanks for having us.
Yeah, and, you know,
tell Andy I said hi, and, you know, the folks at JVSR, forgive him. it's been a number of years. I know he's had a bumpy road with the chiropractors out west there. So,
yeah, actually I didn't know that, but
we
give a lot of regard to myofascial issues, and mm-hmm. we do have a chiropractor on the staff, and I know he holds that in great value.
Well, you're welcome to take a look at our stuff. We'll be happy to share it with you, because our stuff is, again, we're dealing more with behavior and dealing more with interaction and how people relate to their
cool.
internal external environment. So we'd be happy to share and. Get a dialogue going, because I think there's a lot of bridges to be built between these different disciplines if we
yeah.
can only sit still long enough to talk to each other. So,
yeah, many different disciplines, but only one person.
Exactly. Wholeness is a big street. All right, thanks
well,
for
thank
joining
you
us
for inviting me.
No problem.
Thank you.
Thanks, have a good
great
one.
Night.
Take care.
Bye. All right, that was awesome.
Yeah. Probably still on there.
He's gone.
Huh?
Oh, man.
All right. So it is 9:52 here on the East Coast. And let's see if this will play. There you go.
That woke me up. Holy crap.
A little flippy music for you here. Sleep now in the fire.
Okay.
So, on that note, we will segue into the Somascopes quickly. It was an interesting conversation because he seemed extremely moo for someone who is extremely woo in terms of the way he was discussing it. Very conventional, very, you know, this is what the research says. But you can tell behind the curtain, he goes having a party with the whole going into the ocean to sleep stuff. So there's a lot of stuff.
Showers.
Exactly. Spiritual showers. Exactly. So I said,
"Andy,
awesome. Come back. Please forgive us." You know, so it's just so funny how that whole discussion was really about the misinformation about sleep and how it's been mischaracterized and compartmentalized and put into the pathological side of the coin. Where there's what he's telling us is that there's a tremendous amount of recuperative power in there and restorative function that most of us are just completely we're not even aware of, and he's not suggesting radical stuff. You know, listen to some music, you know, sit in some dusky light, nothing radical. But most people would be like, "What? You know, most people fall asleep the second hour of American Idol with their mouth open. You can stick a grapefruit in there, and then they gargle, belch, and punch the pillow, and that's, you know, that's about it. Yeah, you know, that's why that whole discussion, and just trying to, like, connect the dots here, because we are in Anto Week now, so we're going up the hill here. When we started out talking with Pam Cuccinello with astrology, you know, she got into some things about other than conscious processes, and then last week, forget about it with the orgies and everything, with Lisa's stuff, and this whole idea of identity with terms of your sexual identity, and he's getting into spiritual identity with this stuff that he's talking about. He's not just talking about someone who has, you know, a little apnea, and maybe they get a little insomnia once in a while. He's talking about people that have a profound disconnection with the core of themselves, and they'd have no way of getting back. And he's suggesting very, to me, simple ways to get there, but I'm sure, because it's delivered with the conventional little coating on top of it, it's, you know, a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down. So somehow if we say it as somasapes, we're weird, but I guess if you're sitting at a resort in Arizona, it sounds okay. I don't know. It just, he's a nice guy. He was a great guy to come on. He did a great job of getting the information across and gave me a lot to think about, and I'm sure I'll be emailing back and forth in my insomniac non-night owl state.
Mm-hmm.
No such thing as a night owl. See me dancing here at 4 in the morning.
Dancing. You're in a walking coma.
No, not at 4 in the morning, I'm not.
4
in the morning, I'm doing one of these.
You doing it now?
Wow! I feel good!
And on that note,
bouncing over to Dr. Jeb for the tip of the week. Go ahead.
You know, it's pretty cool what he was talking about in terms of establishing rhythm, and it's something that actually what the kids do and what Steiner talked about, Rudolf Steiner, with early childhood education and getting kids really started, the sleep process, the bedtime process really starts when they get out of school. So it's sort of establishing a rhythm of what happens so that, you know, like you said, Mark, so many people, and kids included, they end their day in front of the TV or in front of a computer screen, and then it's like, okay, close the notebook, close the, you know, turn off the TV and go to bed. It's like, okay, and they got all those images running through their head. They just watched, they just saw, you know, this tonight on Eyewitness News, you know, Philippi's hair is on fire, so whatever.
Oh, God, no.
Philippi's seen dancing at 4 a.m.
That's not unusual. That's news.
So it's the idea is a very simple rhythm, and it doesn't have to start at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, but it could happen at you know, 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock when it's dinner time, if you're just thinking ahead to what's happening next instead of, you know, pulling your hair out because, you know, the kids aren't sitting down to dinner exactly the way you want them to, or they're playing grab ass, which they always are, is sort of say, okay, well, it's 6 o'clock now, and I want them in bed by, you know, 7:30, and so what have we done between 4 o'clock and now, and then what's going to happen between now, and then to get everybody settled so the kids can beat down, and then we can, you know, go down after that. So it's just about kind of, it's simple stuff. It's like Doc was saying, you know, you just create the rhythm, but the consistency with that rhythm does make a huge difference for our family, and we're not perfect about it, and we do get off track, but I can tell you what, if it weren't for that, I wouldn't be upright right now talking on the phone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, like I said, this is one of those things where you're dealing with contemporary lifestyle where it's not linear. It's not going to be like go sleep at dusk and all that stuff. It's going to have pockets where you're going to be getting your cat nap in the airport, and you're going to be, you know, getting your 20 minutes at the desk, and this is one of the things where I'm not sure if it's practical to say that everyone needs to. You just want, I always say more often than not, it's like 4 days out of 7, at least get it, you know, close to the target, and then the rest of the time your body can compensate. So, all right, so I guess we're winding down here. I'm going to put my background music on while Val gives us her quote. Let me just hit the switch.
You better hurry up.
I'm hurrying, damn it.
A short quote, anyway.
Go ahead.
All right. It's too loud.
You see the same old thing.
I don't think you can hear me over that. Let me see.
I hear you. What?
All right. A ruffled mind makes a restless pillow.
I think I wrote that.
I think you did too. That's Charlotte Bronte and Dr. Mark.
There you go. All right, Sapes. It's our time now.
Yes, it is.
Yes. So we'll see you next week with some pagan stuff.
Yep, that's right.
So
oh,
then,
God.
Travel light through the darkness. I'll be dancing.
Let the midnight
fade. Good night, everybody. Bye-bye.
Shine a light on me.
Everybody.
Let the midnight fade.
Lost Talk Radio.
By the way, you better.